This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you, talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 140 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. First off, shout out thanks to Carlos of Vintage Mets. Great checking out his amazing Mets ticket stub collection that he has and all the gear that he's gone throughout the years. If you haven't listened to that episode, it's a must listen. And you can follow him on Instagram and X at @vintage_Mets, and vintage is kind of shortened VNTG_METS, and make sure you check him out as well. Now on to this week's episode. A lot to cover today. Mets coming back from the West Coast trip, and they are welcomed by a guy that we've been wanting to see for a while now, JD Martinez, here to break it down with me. The great Laura Albanese, sports reporter for Newsday, covers the Mets, covers the Yankees. She does it all. Great to have you on, Laura. Thanks so much for joining Subway to Shea.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
So the Mets had a big West Coast trip. I thought it was pretty successful. I wanted them to go 3-3 at the start of it. I did not know they were going to take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. That was a big surprise to me. And then I kind of got selfish. I was like, you know what? Maybe they could go 4-2 here. It wasn't to be. The Giants got the best of them in that, and they took 2 out of 3 from the Mets there. But, you know, what are your biggest takeaways from that whole road trip to begin with?
I mean, I was kind of in the same, kind of the same mental space you were. I was, you know, if they came out of the West Coast trip with a 500 record, you have to be happy as a Mets fan. The fact they took those first two against the Dodgers when the Dodgers were so heavily touted, you're like, okay, they've got something really going here. That said, you know, I was still pretty encouraged. The biggest thing was Francisco Lindor busting out of his slump, being able to hit from the left side is a big deal. You're seeing stuff from Tyrone Taylor, and now you're set up in a good way where you're coming home for a 7-game homestand. And yeah, I mean, JD Martinez is joining the team today. And I obviously think that's going to give the lineup a big boost. So, I'm encouraged, especially with how the way this season started. There were times where I just did not think that they would click in the way they needed to at least tread water until Kodai Senga came back. But they're definitely showing some resilience, and I think it's more resilience than we saw definitely in the last season.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you brought up, because, you know, we saw in 2022 how resilient the Mets were. 2023, they kind of took a back step, and just to see them break out of the 3-game losing streak, that's the thing that I want to see most from this team, is able to stop losing streaks from, getting even bigger, because they don't really have an ace in the staff that can just stop this. And right. Thankfully enough, with how the bullpen has been pitching and somewhat the starting pitching has been okay, but to, you know, stop it and nip it in the bud. I know they had that 5-game losing streak, but since then they have been, you know, pretty good. And a big part of that West Coast trip, like you said, was Francisco Lindor. 3 home runs, had 8 RBIs. Most importantly, hitting from the left side, it was very encouraging, because he has struggled so much. Last 7 games, banged .357, has an OPS of 1.093 on the season. Finally got his batting average over 200, so that's nice to see right now. And it just seems like he's putting it together at the right time. What would you like to see more from Lindor, just to stay consistent at the plate?
I mean, I think you said it. It's just consistency. Being able to get on base, continuing to do that, continuing to hit from the left side. But what I did like was the fact that his teammates were kind of able to pick him up when he was struggling. I don't want to put too much stock into it, but, you know, it really did touch him, the fact that Mets fans were able to cheer him after he got so much hatred online. I know that really bothered his family. It bothered him. It would bother anybody. And, you know, I don't want to overplay these things, but baseball is a psychological sport. There's so much of it, just like minute movements, little things in your mechanics. And when you're in your own head a little bit too much, when you're pushing a little bit too much, pressing a little bit too much, that can easily mess up your mechanics. And so with Lindor, I think we're just seeing a player who is playing to his ability. There was never going to be a world where he just forgot how to hit. It was going to be a matter of time. Now that I do think that he's gotten out of that mental rut, that sort of like physical mechanical rut, I do think we're going to see a little bit more consistency from him.
Yeah, that homestand, I think, was very important. important. It wasn't a packed crowd at Citi Field, but the fans that were there were very supportive, not only of him, but of the entire team. And I think that kind of carried over into this West Coast trip, into how they played so well against the Dodgers and were able to come back and play well in that last game against the Giants as well. And, you know, another player who's kind of turning back clock, I guess, and not big because it was 1 year before, but Starling Marte, who has struggled since last season and at the end of 2022, seems like his old self. He's batting 290 right now. He's got 4 home runs, 12 RBIs, and an OPS of 780. I like what I've seen so far from him. I know that during the spring, he kind of was trying to adjust. Even on the field, he doesn't look as comfortable as we've seen him to be. I don't know if that's the after effects still from the groin injury, but it's great to kind of see this old Starling Marte back.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes when you talk about defense, he might be a little bit tentative. It's not necessarily that he's hurt, because I do think he's healthy. And that has always been the issue with Starling Marte. He's a career 280 hitter. But I mean, think about some of the things he had. He had the groin surgery. He had like stuff with his oblique, and then he had the migraines, and it seemed to be one thing after another after another. And I mean, we learned in 2022 that when Starling Marte is gone, this Mets offense kind of evaporates a little bit. We saw that in September. I think he had hurt his finger or something like that. I don't know. It's been so long. But that presence in the top of the lineup to be able to create traffic when you have slightly heavier hitters, obviously you have Pete Alonso, and then you have Francisco Lindor, and able to drive him in. And, you know, he still has that speed. I know that Baseball Savant has like his sprint speed way, way down, but that just doesn't pass the eye test. I think generally speaking, he's still a menace on the base paths. I don't know if he has 5 or 6 stolen bases this year. He has, you know, he's very savvy in the way that he's able to steal bases. So now even if he gets on base with a walk or a single, that can, you know, sometimes be a double. I do think that his defense will improve. And I like, you know, people gave Harrison Bader some flack when he came here. You know, he's light hitter. He gets hurt a lot. We saw that with the Yankees a good bit. But to have that sort of presence in center field, he is genuinely one of the best defensive center fielders I have ever seen. The amount of ground that he covers, the routes that he takes, I do think helps bolster that defense in a way that maybe isn't always immediately noticeable in the day-to-day.
I took my dad to a game, the Doc Gooden game, and he made a couple of fantastic catches that maybe he would have dropped if he wasn't in center field. So yeah, Harrison Bader has just been kind of a blessing, not only to help out, you know, Nimmo in left, but as well as Starling Marte in right field. But you mentioned Starling Marte stealing bases. Like, it doesn't look like he's running fast, but he definitely is. I mean, he led the team in stolen bases last year, so I'm not shocked at all that he's going to be at the top of the lineup from now on. I know that's his spot. He likes the two hole, and I think it's important for him, especially with, you know, batting in behind Nimmo, who really doesn't steal bases.
Right. He's stealing more of them this year, and that's definitely a concerted effort. So if Nimmo kind of keeps that trend going, it is funny though, right? Because Nimmo is such a fast guy, but he never had, and the thing with stolen bases, I think we all know, it's not just a speed thing, it's an instinct thing. It's being able to read the pitcher, it's being able to read defenses, it's understanding the situation that you're in. You know, you think about a guy like even a Roger Cedeno or a Ricky Henderson. Yeah, they obviously had the speed, but it was more than that. But now Nimmo, especially with the new rules that were introduced a couple of years back, he's doing a little bit more of that. So if you have that, if you have him getting on base, I know he's not getting on base as much as he has in past years, but if you have that, if you have Starling Marte, then suddenly you have Lindor producing. That's a pretty exciting top of the lineup, and you're not even touching yet, you know, getting down to Pete Alonso, or if Jeff McNeil keeps racking up the hits, if he does continue to get on base. So, I mean, they can be pretty formidable if they want to be.
Yeah, those top two are very important in the lineup, as well as you mentioned Lindor, Alonso, McNeil, because the Mets have suffered some injuries here. They lose Francisco Alvarez during that Dodgers series, torn ligament in his thumb. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, but he was playing okay. He had a really good start to the season, and then he kind of like tailored off a little bit. He only had 1 home run. He's got 8 RBIs, .236 batting average. You know, look at the replacement, you know, the reinforcements that the Mets have, and Tomas Nito and Omar Narvaez. Mendy said both of these guys are going to be playing, so I guess it's going to be somewhat of a maybe a 60-40 kind of split here, with Narvaez getting more playing time because there are going to be less lefties to go against in the starting rotations that are out there. But and obviously I'm going to preface this. I think there's no no chance at all, because some Met fans have asked about this, no chance that Kevin Parada is coming up at all. He's struggling in the minor leagues right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him in this situation, and I don't necessarily think that it's, I don't think it would help him, and I don't think it would help the Mets either. Yeah. I know people have their thing with Tomas Nido, the lack of offense, but he is a great framer. He's a good defensive catcher. He does have value there, especially with the starting pitching. Starting pitching has been okay. You know, it was never going to blow anybody out of the water with Kodai Senga out. So I do think that that's actually a pretty good tool. Narvaez, he's solid. He's a veteran. He can hold down the pitching staff. He can put together some competitive at-bats. And at this point, this is the best you can hope for. I mean, when we saw that Alvarez went down, you know, immediately you're like, when you hear Mendoza say, you know, he's worried, like, well, it's a broken thumb. So, I mean, when I heard 6 to 8 weeks, is it good? No. Is it as bad as it could be? Also, no.
Yeah, it's not like he's missing the season. It's, you know, obviously it's the 6 to 8 weeks. So as soon as I heard that, I was like, get Nito up here. The thing that even I think outside of the offense, which, you know, we liked what we've seen so far from Francisco Alvarez, it's for me, it's the defense. It's the pitch framing, especially with this rotation and this pitching staff where they, you know, they do throw a lot of walks in there and a lot of balls. With Francisco Alvarez behind the plate, he's able to steal a lot of strikes that, you know, when I'm putting him and Omar Narvaez together, I don't get that from Omar Narvaez. I don't get him stealing some strikes, especially that game on Monday with Jose Quintana. It wasn't his best start. He was throwing a lot of balls, but there were some strikes where I'm like, you know what? If Francisco Alvarez was behind the plate, I think he would have been able to steal some of those with the way he frames. And I think, like you mentioned with Tomas Nido, he provides that better, you know, opportunity to steal some strikes away.
Yeah, and you know, he's always gotten along really well with his pitching staff. He has that kind of rapport, which I do think is important when you're talking about a battery. I don't know enough about Narvaez's framing because I haven't looked at his numbers, but I do feel like Nito is elite at this level when it comes to that. So yeah, I get it. I get the people being like, well, you know, going back to Tomas Nito, but frankly, sometimes I feel like he's undervalued for what he can provide in a difficult situation.
You know, I think that they went, what was it, 26 for 26 at the time where they were not able to throw runners out at second base.
Right, yeah.
Is that more of, do you think that's more of the Mets catching group not being as good throwing it, or is it the rules? Because there were a couple times where like McNeil was in front of the bag and they had called the obstruction rule, or it where the setup is as well for like a Lindor or McNeil. Is that more of an issue, or do you think it's more on the catchers?
I feel like it's more of a rule situation, frankly. I mean, we saw it already in spring training. They put that bug in like in Lindor's head with that obstruction call, and they're just, you're just like, it's kind of like in football, like, so what's a catch, like what's obstruction, like what does the rule mean, and how could you possibly defend against this? So you add that with someone like Alvarez, who's still kind of getting, I actually like him defensively. I like his pop time. I like some of his reaction time, but he's still getting his bearings as a defensive catcher. You put those two things together and it can be a little bit more difficult because, again, you have the psychology of, if I even get this to second base, if I make the perfect throw, the fielder standing in one place, is it going to be obstruction? You've got, you know, the larger bases, you've got the pitch clock, you have all these different factors. It's one of those things where when the rules started changing, I'm like, they want to provide more offense, and there's not really much you can defend against rule changes. So while it was not ideal that they had allowed that many stolen bases, I don't know that there was too much that Francisco Alvarez could necessarily done.
It's so weird how far we've come from that. And I think it all began with the whole Chase Utley, Ruben Tejada incident in the 2015 playoffs to now, like, you can barely be in front of the bag.
I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's gotten crazy. But, you know, as much as it stinks not to have Francisco Alvarez on this team, I am personally okay going along with Narvaez and Nito and really not going after catcher, because JD Martinez is basically on his way. And I feel like if healthy, you know, knock on wood, 100%, he will provide the offense that probably would be missing from a Francisco Alvarez.
Yeah. And again, you said if healthy, but, you know, you look at his track record. I understand the back issues are chronic, but you look at his track record and JD Martinez, even at 36 years old, has consistently produced. So you can pencil in a guy. I mean, you're always going to take a guy you can pencil in for 30 home runs. My colleague Tim Healy had a pretty good analysis in today's Newsday where he's like, is like JD Martinez going to be the messiah of this Mets offense? No, but he's going to help. He's going to help a lot. The Mets have actually been pretty good out of the DH spot, which you haven't really seen in the last couple of years. And I like the way that Mendoza uses it, kind of uses it a little bit to also give guys a breather when they need it. But when you have, again, a guy who can protect Pete Alonso in the lineup, who gives that power potential that at times the Mets have really not had to a great degree, this is going to be a pretty significant deal. And that's probably one of the reasons why when Alvarez went down, as terrible as it is, it didn't feel like a death knell. It felt like, okay, well, he's going to come back. Senga's going to come back. If McGill comes back and he's anything like spring training McGill, that's going to be pretty good too. And the bullpen has been holding it down. So you're in a situation where if you can scratch out a couple of runs early going, then you could probably hold on and, you know, pencil that in for a W, which is not necessarily how it felt last year, where it felt like no lead was safe. And if they were behind, it was over.
Yeah, they didn't have great depth last year, a lot better this season with the way Stearns has kind of put this bullpen together. But you mentioned Carlos Mendoza and the way he's been able to interchange players and put them in the lineup or work the bullpen, especially with the way the starting pitching has not really been as helpful as we would like it to be. I'm not saying it's been terrible because we've witnessed, you know, 2 to 3 innings worth of starting pitching all of last year. But, you know, these guys and what Mendy does and, you know, getting Tyrone Taylor playing time and he makes the best of it. DJ Stewart making the best of his time. You know, Starling Marte being able to not only play the outfield, but also get some time at DH, I think has been very helpful as well. And, you know, you throw him, I know originally they had mentioned when Martinez came here that they were going to do Martinez fourth and, you know, Alonso third. And now the fact that we have Starling Marte being able to get his role back being second pushes everyone down a little bit. So it would be Nimmo, Marte, Lindor, Alonso, and Martinez. That's a formidable, you know, top five of a lineup right there.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you have if Tyrone Taylor can continue producing, that's pretty good. Harrison Bader's been hitting a little bit, which, you know, you're looking at a guy who's glove forward, but we saw what he was able to do with the Yankees in a short period of time when he does get on a heater there. So, I mean, this lineup can absolutely be scary. And one of the things that I have liked about Mendoza a lot is his flexibility. We saw, like, even during that 5-game losing streak at the beginning of the season, he was never tied to anything. He's like, all right, this didn't work. Let's change the lineup up again. Now, when you put that out there and you're in a 5-game losing streak, sometimes fans will be like, well, that's a sign of weakness. Yeah. He has no consistency. He doesn't know what he's doing. But he was still, honestly, it felt like he was still feeling things out. And I think it takes a certain level of confidence in your managerial abilities to be able to do that. And the fact that he was able to kind of have that confidence and have that flexibility, despite never having managed a Major League Baseball team, I thought was indicative of the stability that he provides this team. He just kind of has like a very soothing presence. He doesn't freak out. And I think that does actually kind of spread over to everybody else. And I do feel like maybe he has potentially a little bit more flexibility in his decision-making than Buck Showalter did last year under Billy Epler.
Yeah, it did. Well, now towards the end, as we had found out, it didn't seem like Billy Epler and Buck were on the same page, especially last season. But you kind of, at least to the start, are seeing, you know, the workings of David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza and that team up together. And, you know, the fact that Mendoza as well, you go from the lineup, you go to the bullpen. The fact that he brought in Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning against the Dodgers and had the confidence enough to go to Reed Garrett, who comes in and strikes out the side to close out the game. I mean, those type of moves not only help the team win the game, but it's a confidence booster for the players themselves that you can count on a guy like Reed Garrett to come in and close out a game when maybe Edwin Diaz has been used too many days in a row, or like on Saturday they used him in the eighth inning.
Right. And, you know, and a lot of it probably has to do with matchups. You know, this you want Edwin Diaz to go up against the heart of the order. And the fact that Reed Garrett has emerged as such a high leverage arm, essentially coming from nowhere based on a few tweaks, is pretty phenomenal. I mean, he went from a four-seam heavy pitcher to a guy who's mixing in that cutter slider a little bit more, and the splitter has been such a dominant force for him. And then he's been able to kind of establish that fastball in terms of like, okay, if he falls behind the count, he's able to go back to that. And so much of that has to do with, yes, you have David Stearns known for his ability to spot bullpen talent, even though Bree Garrett's an Epler guy, but also the ability to adapt and see what his strengths were. And he wasn't using his strengths last year. And this year, probably probably with a mix of Stearns and the analytics team. And also he said guys like Adam Ottavino, who has a fantastic baseball mind, and Edwin Diaz, he's been able to take that stuff that he already had in his back pocket and use it to great effect. And seriously, it was mostly like pitch selection and knowing when and how much to throw something and doing that effectively. And I think that's one of the reasons why, even though relievers can be streaky, when I look at Reed Garrett, I feel like, okay, I think this might be the real deal. I think he might actually be pretty, pretty stinking good.
Yeah, this is not like a little stint that we're getting from Reed Garrett, but I mean, the strikeouts are there. He's kind of taking over that Trevor Williams type role where he's going to pitch you multiple innings. And it's definitely important, not only the fact that the rotation has not been able to give them innings just yet. I think it will come, but it's to be seen. But, you know, we just lost Brooks Raley as well during the weekend. He's on a 15-day IL with the left elbow inflammation. And your colleague, Tim Healy, he mentioned it, that this happened to him last season around this time where he went on out for 2 weeks and we lost him there. They also don't have Nate Lavender to come up here to help out. I'm a guy that I need to have two lefties in the bullpen.
Right.
I know that this doesn't happen for every team, but I feel like it's so important that they missed it in 2022, definitely last year, because you never know when you need, if you're using Brooks Raley every day and then you don't have him for a day, you'd like to have someone else there. And I'm thankful that they have Jake Diekman, but to lose him, Brooks Raley at this time, you know, stinks. I think he'll be okay. My concern level is not too crazy at the moment. Where are you at with, you know, losing Brooks Raley?
I mean, I do think it's a significant blow. You know, when I came into the season, I was like, Brooks Raley is probably one of the more important bullpen arms that this team has. He was able to do so much last year when he was healthy. And frankly, with the way that pitching is going, every time I hear the word, every time I heard the word elbow inflammation in the past, I would freak out. But now with all the injuries that we're getting from pitchers that are either overexerting themselves or trying too hard to introduce new things too quickly, elbow inflammation has somehow become, you know, oh, Tommy John surgery or something else. And so I'm always like, hey, let's be conservative. Let's be conservative with a guy like that. I mean, you're seeing the Yankees being conservative with Gerrit Cole and his elbow inflammation just because... At this point, with the level of stress that's being put on these arms, you really can't risk it. And the Mets really can't risk losing a guy like Brooks Raley for the rest of the year. I mean, like much like you, I like two lefties in the bullpen. Diekman's been doing fine. You know, that's great. But if you want to be a viable threat, you know, for the wild card, It helps to have a guy like Raley in your bullpen.
Yeah, and Brooks has been basically untouchable to start the season. 7 innings pitched, he has 9 strikeouts, hasn't given up a run. So I'm hoping that it's just the 2 weeks and that he comes back okay. We'll definitely see where that is moving forward. Once again, I'm here with Laura Albanese of Newsday. I want to talk a little bit about the starting rotation before we wrap up here. And the walks are concerning. I will say that. The length in games are not there because of them throwing so many pitches. I think the best so far has been what we've seen from Luis Severino, even in that San Francisco game, because he was pretty much untouchable until that fifth inning and, you know, a whole calamity of errors happened there. But Severino and Jose Buto have been absolutely their best starters.
I 100% agree. And I am genuinely so happy for Severino. I covered him a good bit when he was on the Yankees, and to see the toll it took when, you know, it felt like he essentially got the yips. You spend so many years, you have this incredible year in 2017, you get this big contract, and then injury. And then suddenly, you know, talking to him last year, he's like, I don't know what's going on. Like every time I'm about to throw a pitch, it's like, I'm in my head, I'm like, what's going to happen? What am I going to do? And the reason that was kind of difficult to hear is because when you talk to people about Luis Severino, you're like, this guy has some of the most incredible stuff. And that's been the truth for years. So, but now that we're seeing him adjust, you know, we're seeing a little bit more movement in his pitches, maybe not quite as much velocity, but he's only sacrificing that to create more movement. I like what he's been able to do. And the fact that he's frankly been able to get out of his own head is really promising, because it was never about talent with him. It was about health, and it was about executing the arsenal that he already had. So if he can continue that, if he can be consistent, The Mets really might have stolen one with Severino.
I say this every episode, and I feel like people are going to get tired of me hearing it from me, but I've always wanted, like, since the beginning of the offseason, I wanted Luis Severino, whether it was for the back end of the rotation, which I thought would fit him well, but I thought he had all the talent in the world. There was a time, I think, maybe around 2017, 2018, where they were talking about him and DeGrom at the same length. So, yep. You know, Luis Severino has the talent. We're starting to see him harness it back and get it back, and that's great to see. And you look at a guy, you know, who just comes up in Jose Buto, who pitched very well towards the end of last season and has carried it over into spring. And now here, even with the game on Saturday against the Dodgers, I thought he kind of handled the lineup to the best of his ability, which is a tough lineup to begin with when you look at the top three that are there. But Jose Buto has been such a revelation, not only to this rotation now, but could be, you know, moving forward into next year when they again have to reshape the entire rotation.
Yeah, you know, a couple days ago, I was going through like some of the best pitches in Major League Baseball, and Jose Buto's fastball was up there. That is a formidable pitch. This guy knows what he's doing. But above all, he's providing stability to a rotation that coming into the season didn't really have much. When Tyler McGill went down, like, I know everyone's always been like, oh, you know, if Tyler McGill can just get over that hump, then get something good here. And there was that sense of optimism with McGill. But after he went down, you're just like, I don't know. I mean, the Senga thing was bad enough. This is a pretty hideous 1-2 punch at this point. But Buto being able to shore up the back end of that rotation, eat up a couple innings. Obviously, you'd like him to go longer. You'd like to see his command get a little bit better. But to be able to do that, again, I go back to once they get their full complement of starting pitchers, this is a situation where Mendoza has all these weapons in his arsenal, and he's going to be able to deploy them to pretty great effect. And, you know, some of these guys coming back from injury, they're also going to be pretty well rested. So if the Mets can keep at it, like up to the trade deadline, you could have a team that actually performs well down the stretch, which has not necessarily always been this franchise's forte in the last 30 years.
Yeah. No, it hasn't for sure. And I think what's also important that people may forget is, you know, Kodai Senga, they're still going to have to do what they did with him last year, especially now coming back from the injury. So we might not see him. We might see him once a week pitch, just kind of like the way they're doing with Yamamoto as well. I think someone mentioned that he only got 3 starts on regular rest last season. And that was towards the end of the season. But I think they're going to have to do the same thing with him, especially with, you know, McGill coming back from injury. You got, you know, Buto at the end there. You definitely have Joey Lucchesi in the minors and Christian Scott, who I want to get into shortly. But there's one guy that I really had high hopes for, but has been struggling, and that's Adrian Hauser. Like, I don't know if he's just been bad or if he's kind of hit into bad luck, because he's had to face the Dodgers, who have a great lineup, and he's had to face the Braves. And outside of those two starts, I mean, he's been okay against the Pirates, and I think it was Detroit. Yeah, Detroit, where they took him out early.
Yeah, I think one of the issues with Hauser is that he's taking on a bigger role than he initially was signed up for. So I think you would have taken that if that's your 5th starter and, you know, he looks okay and he's keeping you in games. But the Dodgers are a big ask. He's going to have some downtime. I still have not seen enough from Hauser. And he was one of those signings where I'm like, you know what? Low risk, medium-ish reward. I'm not mad at it. Let's see how this works out. So I'm still kind of like, I'm withholding judgment on how this is going to go with him. Like, cause I like that game against the Pirates. I have seen at least some gamesmanship, his ability to keep the Mets in it early on. Yeah. And sometimes you just need those guys, those innings eaters, those guys who will go out every 5th day. But in addition to that, I do feel like, to go back to your point about Senga, is I wouldn't also be mad at like a 6-man rotation. Once he comes back, that way it extends him a little bit more. If Buto is continuing to do this, if McGill is healthy, you are just protecting your starters for a possible postseason run. And that's more than most people expected going into this. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, my comp for him at the beginning of the season was more of like a Rick Reed type pitcher.
Not
for Hauser. Hauser definitely does not seem to be there yet. But at the beginning of the spring, I was like, oh, this guy kind of reminds me of Rick Reed. But we just have not seen that. Definitely not at all.
I feel like it's a little bit early. I think Rick Reed might be a little bit of an overreach. I liked Rick Reed.
Rick Reed was one of my favorite pitchers. pitchers. I was like kind of hoping he would be that kind of anchor at the end of the rotation. We just haven't seen it yet. It's still early, like you said, it's still early, and he's like he's faced some of the tough teams. So let's see if he could bounce back on Saturday against the Cardinals. Now, Christian Scott seems to be on the horizon here. He's pitched in three games so far. He's 3-0, 3.48 ERA, and he's got 34 strikeouts in 20 and two thirds innings pitched. When is the right time to kind of pull? I know it's early still, but like we've heard so much about him. He's finally getting his bearings in AAA. When is that kind of right time, you think, to pull the trigger and bring him up?
With pitchers especially, I like to preach a little bit of patience. I would like to wait, and I think they will do this. I would like to wait at least until like an August, September situation. I just want to see, I want to see him mature. I want to see him marinate. I want to see him be so confident in AAA that you don't get overwhelmed by the idea of making your major league debut. And you kind of want to do it in a situation where he's protected. So, you know, don't call him up for a big game. Don't call him up just because somebody got hurt and, oh my God, we need someone right at this instant. Because when you look at Christian Scott, you know, you can, if they play their cards right, if he continues to mature, that's the future. This kid is legitimately just so talented. And so, yeah, everyone is clamoring to get him up to the major leagues as soon as possible. I do think we should see him this year. I do not think we should see him anytime soon.
You know, we got so spoiled from the Big Four in like 2015, right, and a couple of years after that. And to preach this patience with Christian Scott, I think is great, because we've seen, and it's not to their fault. A lot of it had to do with injuries and not having enough depth. But David Peterson got rushed up here. Right. Even Tyler McGill got rushed up here multiple times. So to get Christian Scott, like you said, get him the confidence to come up here and, you know, not even waver in his opening start, I think that's the right way to go.
Yeah, I mean, again, with pitchers, confidence is such a big deal. And frankly, you know, when you looked at Peterson, when you looked at McGill, they were again those guys who had the physical presence, the physical tools. But then you have to also put them in a situation to succeed. And when you're yo-yoing and ping-ponging these guys back and forth, when you're asking them to essentially save your team because someone got hurt, that is not a position to succeed. They just cannot afford to do that with a guy of Christian Scott's talent, I think. I would wait as much as you possibly can. But I do get like the desire to see, all right, let's really see what we have here, what we have in this kid. And it'll happen. It'll happen eventually. But, you know, again, no time soon. Everyone holds their noses.
Yeah, for sure. Laura, thank you so much for joining the Subway Shay podcast today. I really appreciate this. I know we've been in contact for trying to get you on for a while now, so I appreciate you doing this. Let everyone know what you're working on and where they can interact with you on social media.
Sure. Laura Albanese, my Twitter is Albanese Laura. My Instagram is Laura Write Stuff, and I write for Newsday. I cover the Mets and the Yankees. I'm a contributor at SNY, so you can sometimes catch me on Baseball Night in New York, and I will be covering the Mets and Cardinals for the next 2 days. So if you walk by the press box, just wave. So that's
you have all the really important stories, because you've covered the food, which I love going around and eating.
It's
food all
thing,
season
yeah.
long. I'm surprised that with the whole steak sandwich with the surf and turf, that was really good.
Okay. I'm so mad that it's good. I'm so, so mad, because there's absolutely no way that I'm spending $40 of my own money on a sandwich at work. But yeah, it was really good. And I don't like cheese on lobster. None of it made sense, but infuriating, absolutely infuriating. It was excellent.
I'm going to have to try it out now. I was like, when I first saw it, I was like, man, $40 for this. Like, I like their lobster rolls there. Like, I do genuinely like the lobster
they're
rolls.
But
now,
for me. Sometimes they're like good and sometimes they're a little bit dry. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's the day. Like,
yeah.
When my wife orders it, sometimes it's like they put too much butter. Then another time it's not enough butter. So it's like slim pickings where you got to make sure you get whichever one's the right one. But like $40, that's like two tickets right there.
I know. And I'm genuinely like terrified, because I told people that it was really good, that they're going to go get it and it's going to be like an off day. And it's going to be, well, like the Newsday chick told me to get this and it's trash and I'm going to feel terrible.
I love going around and trying everything throughout the year, because I have a 20 game plan. So I'm always trying whatever I can, whether it's like it's Pig Beach, or the only thing I don't go for is Shake Shack, because I have one of those, you know, at home and I can.
Yeah. And the line is like whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But that story, as well as, you know, I guess the Rally Pimp, people don't like him, call him that. But Max Sweener, that's
Max
another
is
great
very
one.
Nice.
I love that stuff, but you do great work, and I appreciate you coming on. Love to have you on again sometime in the future, and like I said, keep up the great work. Everything you do is just awesome.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right. That was Laura Albanese. Catch her great coverage daily on Newsday. That wraps up Subway to Shea. You can follow on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen and subscribe to the Subway to Shea podcast on Apple and Spotify. Subscribe on YouTube as well. We're at 390, I think, followers. Make sure you get us up to 400. I would appreciate that a whole lot. If you enjoyed this episode and enjoy Subway to Shea in general, leave a review. Hopefully you give me 5 stars and hit that like button. With that said, thank you so much for tuning in and helping this podcast grow each and every week. Without you, there would be no me. So I appreciate you. So thanks very much. For Anthony Rivera, this is Subway to Shea podcast. And always remember, let's go Mets.